This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, a senior UN human rights official recounts the passionate demands he's been hearing for an end to impunity in the Central African Republic. And we'll hit the beach in Kenya to hear how environmentalists are turning trash from the sea into cash as the UN Ocean Conference promises a new future for life below water. But first, Gabon has announced a bold new initiative to conserve the incredible natural treasures of its coastal waters. Lee White, the director of Gabon's National Parks, confirmed. Speaking on the margins of the United Nations Ocean Conference, he said the network would include 9 new marine parks and 11 aquatic reserves, covering just over a quarter of Gabon's ocean territory. The idea is to protect ecological resources and threatened marine species like leatherback turtles and humpback whales, but also to restore and sustainably manage marine fisheries. Mr. White sat down with Cristina Silveiro to explain the vision behind this initiative.
So yesterday's announcement by the president is the culmination of 5 years of scientific work followed by 3 rounds of public consultation. And what we announced was the creation of a network of marine protected areas, 9 marine parks and 11 aquatic reserves, if we translate the French, covering 26% of Gabon's ocean space. So you're just over a quarter. And the vision is to conserve the incredible natural treasures of the ocean that we have in Gabon. We have the biggest population of nesting leatherback turtles. We have about 20% of the world humpback whales that come to breed in Gabon. So there are some real treasures that need protection. But of course, we're thinking about sustainable development, and the oceans are critical for food security and a great source of sustainable livelihoods if they're well managed. And so creating protected areas is not just about conservation, it's also about how we optimize the use of our oceans and how we maximize actually the productivity of the fisheries. Because there's lots of science that shows that by creating protected areas, you can actually increase the sustainable harvest of fisheries. And so that's really our vision.
Now, you mentioned that you held public consultations. Is that a way to ensure that the programs that you put in place and the rules that you put in place for these fisheries will be followed by the population?
It's always much better if the population is engaged in conservation. So the laws of Gabon compel us to consult the public before we create protected areas. But going beyond that, it's a very sound and useful process, because by getting the public involved at the beginning, everybody's vested in the protected area, you reduce your conflicts, and by explaining to people how the protected areas are going to make their lives better, initially by increasing the amount of fish there is to catch, but we also have incredible tourist potential. Gabon's the only place in the world where you can see elephants walking on the beach and see whales at the same time. We caught a world record tarpon, which is one of the best sport fishing fishes, just a month ago in Luango National Park, or just off Luango National Park. And so our hope is that not only will people have an increased sustainable harvest of fish, but we'll start to diversify the economy by creating tourism jobs as well.
During a recent visit to the Central African Republic, or CAR, a senior UN official heard passionate demands for an end to impunity in the country. The Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Andrew Gilmore, told UN News people there were desperate for an end to their tormented history. Progress has been made in securing the country, largely because of the efforts of the UN peacekeeping mission MINUSCA, established 3 years ago when sectarian violence was at its peak. Mr. Gilmore began by sharing with Jocelyn Sambira some of the improvements he'd seen on the ground.
What I notice now is a vast improvement in the security, particularly of the capital, Bangui. Elsewhere in the country also there's been a lot of improvement, although there are only 10,000 UN soldiers in a country larger than France with very limited logistic capacity and where roads are very restricted and where it's very hard to get around. So it's not surprising that that small force hasn't been able to restore total stability in a country of that size and with so many different groups fighting for control. Nevertheless, there has been an improvement. On the other hand, there are still strong tensions. MINUSCA, the UN force, is doing a remarkable job in trying to contain them.
What are some of the signs? For example, are markets open? Are, you know, is life coming back to normal?
Well, one particular place I visited is a small Muslim enclave in the middle of Bangui, the capital, which is called PK5. And in that area, last time, it was full of Muslims trying to put their belongings onto trucks in order to drive out of the country and to escape, frankly. Now that area, it's still an enclave. There are still risks in people leaving that area and going outside. But in those days, 3 years ago, it was a guaranteed death sentence if people had left that area unaccompanied by UN escorts. So now you see markets, and actually fairly thriving markets. There is still desperate poverty, but nevertheless, there is economic activity in a way that there wasn't at that time.
During most of your meetings with Central Africans, you heard over and over again that they wanted an end to impunity. Is the UN mapping report a step in that direction?
It covers a 13-year period from 2003 to the end of 2015. During that time, the most appalling human rights violations took place. Killings, mass rape, torture, burning of villages, recruitment of children, untold miseries. The purpose was to launch that report in order to send a signal to the authors of the worst crimes, to the leaders of the groups, the leaders who told their followers to carry out those abuses, that their actions were carefully observed and had been even more carefully documented. And that was a very important signal that impunity will no longer last, that they cannot do that and expect to avoid justice.
To mark the UN Ocean Conference, one African recycling company has been raising awareness of marine pollution together with UN agencies on the Kenyan coast this week. Sam Ngaruiya is chief executive of the recycling company Regeneration Africa, and he's been down at the beach in the coastal town of Malindi talking to Newton Kanhema of the UN Information Centre based in Nairobi. Unfurling a banner reading From Trash to Treasure, the team also marked World Environment Day and removed waste and other debris from the beach for recycling by Regeneration Africa. As the wind howled around, Sam explained to Newton that his company pays for the plastic rubbish and turns it into usable products, creating a win-win for the environment.
We get it from various places and people. We get it from groups, community groups who go up and down the beach collecting on days like today. We get it from schools that collect it and bring to their schools. We get it from hotels that are making an endeavor to be green and collect and sort their plastic. But a lot of it, we get it from people who literally walk up and down the street, seeing a piece of plastic, pick it up, put it in a bag, and then bring to us or to other agents.
Do they bring this waste to you for free, or you pay for it?
Those who spend their day collecting it, we pay and are happy to buy it from them. Okay. And the prices will change or vary depending on the type of plastic it is.
How much waste in terms of weight have you recycled?
Oh, I've not tallied it up, but it's a loss. On an average day or an average week, we can recycle 2 to 3 tons a week. And when we're very busy, we'll do 4 or 5 tons in a week.
And where is your market? Is it here in Kenya?
It's mostly in Kenya, yes, but it's not just at the coast, but it's all over the country.
There is a product from your factory that is in the Vatican as a present to the Pope. Can you tell us about it?
Actually, that's a fencing post that came from EcoPost, not actually my company, but it was another company that would do very similar things. And they were able to make fencing posts for the forest, and that was given to the Pope when he was in Kenya a couple of years ago.
The work that you're doing is great. Do you have some people who work for you who have made their livelihoods out of working with waste?
Yes, absolutely. We're proud to have all kinds of people work for us, including some who are street collectors, collecting bottle cans and pieces of plastic. And now we have been factory workers for 3-4 years. We have people who are truck drivers, and we have a variety of people who will earn and feed their family from our business. We have done it for quite a while.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.